podcast with Azra Begovic.
Welcome to another episode of the Season of Sports with me, Azra Begovic, where we can now finally say that the Premier League is back. And with the Premier League being back, also Fantasy Premier League is back. And I've got a very special man joining me here today. He's the host of the Planet FPL podcast. James, welcome to the Season of Sports.
Thank you very much for having me, Azmi. A pleasure to be on with you.
Well, it's a pleasure. Listen, not only did we miss football for the best part of, I guess, 3 months, but we also missed fantasy Premier League as well, which is, even tastier stuff by some people's opinion. So wanted to get you on to discuss it. I think there's a lot to discuss in this situation, this moment in time. But what are your thoughts on the FPL now going? I mean, such a short space of time, so many games, 5 substitutions. I mean, how does this differ for you in terms of how you construct your team and how you look at things?
Personally, I've taken a very different strategy to what a lot of people are doing in terms of I've gone very heavy. I've basically picking 15 players that I can choose to start with to cope with ongoing problems. I've wildcarded the game week just gone. I'd left, for example, Laporte and Marcus Alonso on my bench, which is always a dangerous strategy with these type of players. But I figured that neither City or Chelsea would keep a clean sheet in that game. And I'm likely to take further risks this weekend. For example, I'm considering leaving Danny Ings out because I think he's very susceptible to rotation against Watford on Sunday. So I'm very much taking the strategy of week to week. And this week is particularly difficult because we've got the unusual element added in of having to pick our FPL sides before we know the FA Cup games. Yeah. So, and obviously teams to play within the game week after that. So these guys in the FA Cup could end up playing 120 minutes, I believe. And then what state does that leave them in for the league game for many of them, which is only 3 days later, for example. So there are elements we're having to deal with at the moment that as FPL managers, we wouldn't normally have to deal with.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think, as you say, normally you have a game week over a couple of days, where now a game week can stretch as almost as long as a week. And a lot can happen in that week, and not just with other games, FA Cup and training, a lot of different things can change. So, you know, I'm like you. I've always tried to have, even before, 15 players who you think are going to play are almost dead certain, because if rotation does happen, you're still giving yourself the best possible chance to have them involved. I mean, any other tips that you have as well? I mean, like I said, how does the 5 substitutions play a role? I mean, does that play factor? Anything else people should be aware of?
Well, I think it can. When I say I've gone heavy with a squad, and I'm a little bit like yourself in terms of I want players on the bench, I know they're going to play. But in this scenario, if we take the example, let's say hypothetically that Aubameyang is left out of that fixture against Norwich, the chances are he's still going to come on during the game. So a lot of these heavy hitting guys that are going to get left out with the addition of the 5 substitutes are very likely to still participate within the match. So there is an argument you could actually go with a weaker bench, for example, and use more power because these guys are still likely to end up on the pitch. I've decided I want to take it where on a week-to-week basis because I think under these circumstances, you can't plan too far ahead and therefore making week-to-week decisions in terms of who I want to select within the team from my group of players.
How difficult is it to make those week-to-week decisions? Because you only get one transfer, one free transfer a week, and obviously a second one if you carry it over for a week. How difficult does that make it?
Certainly does. I mean, this week, in my opinion, is quite a good week to be rolling a transfer. That's what I intend to do. Part of building this squad is that I'd want to stock up on the transfer for when I come into problems or use it as a mini wild card with a -4 or a -8. There were certain ones, say, for example, Danny Ings, who I've had for a number of weeks, actually, is about to walk into some difficult fixtures where I can carry him through at the moment, but then I'm likely to want to get rid. But I might walk into other problems that means that I can't. And that's part of the reason for wanting to keep a strong squad at the moment and give me as many available decisions as possible. Same with if you take combinations, for example, I've seen a lot of people, Ederson and Martinez of Arsenal, for example. you're going to pick Ederson because Arsenal can't usually be trusted defensively and City can. But with Arsenal playing Norwich this week and City playing Liverpool again, it's a good idea to rotate those two. Martinez and Fabianski is another one. Neither side, Arsenal or West Ham, are usually trustable in terms of their defensive returns, but they do rotate very well for the rest of the season for those who might be on a wild card now.
Really, really good points you're making there. I mean, I want to get into some positions and get your picks for each position kind of going forward for the next few weeks. But before I do that, Danny Ings is an interesting one because he's in my team. And I made a couple of transfers for this game week ahead. I mean, I've put Marcus Rashford in because I had Callum Wilson suspended. And also I've put in Gary Cahill. Those are guys I think could be interesting. But Danny Ings, the trouble I have with him, you know, James, if I was to take him out, how do I get the same value? Because his price is pretty good.
Yeah, there's other ones around it, like Calvert-Lewin, for example. I have Calvert-Lewin as well. One of the moves I'm considering at the moment to move off of potentially both of them is looking at Calvert-Lewin down to Greenwood or Nketiah, for example. I prefer Greenwood as a longer-term choice between the two. And then depending on what you've got, it can allow you up to Jimenez, or if you've got more side in the bank, up to Jesus might be a really interesting one following the game week 32 fixture with Liverpool. The problem with City is the rotation, isn't it? Not knowing if these guys are going to play, and can you trust Jesus with a captaincy, for example?
Yeah, I mean, the only Man City player I have is Ederson, because I thought he seems to be the only Stonewall team name on his team sheet. So everyone else is quite difficult to pick. But let's go through a little bit of some of these picks. I mean, give me your best goalkeeping option for and some of these, and I apologize because we've a lot of questions in for you actually for this pod, which has been amazing. So we might repeat a couple of these questions, but give me your best goalkeeping options for the week ahead.
For the week ahead, I quite like Pope again.
Would you also say him for the weeks ahead or just this current week?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind that. Burnley playing a Palace side that might well be without Wilfried Zaha. And other than the Liverpool fixture that they've got in game week 35, I don't mind what they've got left. Even Wolves in game week 36, Wolves are not hugely free scoring. Wolves have actually only scored more than twice in three games this season, all in games when they were behind in games as well. So I don't mind Pope for the rest of the season. The five other fixtures, Palace, Sheffield United, West Ham, Norwich and Brighton, all smell like potential clean sheets to me. So I actually think that saving of 1.1 over the trust of, say, Ederson, for example, can then use you something to get you up from Danny Ings towards Jimenez level or a bit higher if you want to. So Nick Pope is an intended stick around for myself. Can't argue Martinez value if he's going to get the shirt for Arsenal, but as I said previously, you can't see too many clean sheets in them, unfortunately.
Well, funny enough, I had Leno in my draft team. And I've had to take him on to put Martinez in. He kept a clean sheet in his first game. So a good start. But as I said, long term, we'll see what happens there. Nick Pope, a great shout as well for the run-in of games. Who's your defender pick for the weeks ahead?
He's not even a defender, is he, Trent?
Okay.
He's such a talent. I don't really see how you can particularly go without. You're getting amazing value on him now, because I mean, he's certainly going to be a higher price next year. I would pay up to 9 million for him without hesitation next year, personally, with what he's returning. His points this season, I think he's level on points with Mane. Right. And we wouldn't hesitate to captain Sadio Mane, for example. So I mean, I intend to captain Trent most likely in a few of the remaining games. I just think it's an astonishing FPL asset, and I think we have to think beyond that idea now of we shouldn't captain a defender when he's posting returns, which is he's going to see him finish this football season with more than 200 FPL points. I mean, that's crazy for a defender.
Yeah, I mean, the game's changed so much. It's so universal almost in a way, isn't it? I mean, I don't think you can really pick, pick a defender out for that reason. Absolutely. So good choice on Trent. Midfielders, who are you looking at for the weeks ahead?
But similarly, I would never do without KDB, but I think that's a fairly obvious one personally. Bruno Fernandes is the other one I'll highlight. I know, obviously, Martial will be all the rage with the hat-trick in midweek. But I feel like he's really changed the mentality of United's play and their self-belief in the way that they go forward now. And he was always, even with the goals, he was always in and around the action against Sheffield United on Wednesday. So I like Bruno. He offers good value at 8.7. He's another one. I don't think he'll be that price next season. I think he'll be a lot higher. So I want to take advantage of that now.
Okay, well, I've got Mane holding down my midfield. So I usually captain him. So he's been holding on the fort pretty well, I have to say. So I hope he's going to turn out into a decent pick. Strikers, who are you looking at forward-wise?
I think Raul Jimenez is the reliable one that you can leave in there. The only problem with Jimenez is he tends to score in ones. He doesn't score many doubles. In fact, I think he's only had one double this season, which was against Southampton in game week 23. But his consistency is great at his values. Another one, again, he's going to be at a higher price next season. You can trust in him. And I think, as it stands, he's probably my captain this game week.
Who do Wolves play this week?
Sorry, Asmir.
Who do Wolves play this week?
They're Aston Villa away. It's the lunchtime kickoff. Ooh. So there might even be the benefit of knowing the team news as well. The one thing that puts me off with that particular game is the kickoff time, being it's 12:30 and the likely temperature at the moment. Villa can get so done over on the counter-attack, it feels, regularly. And whether Adama starts or doesn't start the game, the way he can link up with Jimenez means that at some point in that game, I'm sure Villa are going to be in trouble. So captaincy is really difficult this week, like I said, because on paper, I think the best choice is Aubameyang. But what if he ends up playing extra time against Sheffield United on the Sunday? Then you almost know he's going to get that rest. Not that he can't do the damage in half hour against Norwich, for example. It's just a dangerous strategy. I like the idea of knowing my captain will play. And if we get elite team news on Wolves, then I'm going to go with Jimenez as it stands.
Good shout. I've got James joining me here from the Planet FPL podcast, talking all things Fantasy Premier League. Make sure you check out the pod. Make sure you check him out on Twitter and all social media platforms. James, we've got a lot of questions to get to. You're a very popular man, which is amazing to see. So I thought we'd get a lot of questions in from our viewers, from our listeners, and people who've been getting involved in all our social media channels. First question is from Wolf in a Cave, which is just an unbelievable name. with great fixtures from game week 33 onwards, would you consider a triple up on Man City? And if so, who? Currently have KDB and Mahrez. Can envisage a Pep team going on holiday after title race is conceded?
I've got KDB and Laporte. So the main one now for me is, yes, I would consider that because I've got an amazing run-in following that Liverpool fixture. I'm kind of, before the Chelsea game, I would have leant towards Jesus, but the fact that Mahrez has started all three Premier League games in a row makes me want to lean that way now. Sane's not getting a look in, is he? And it looks like Pep prefers Sterling out on the left now, which leaves Mahrez really in competition, mainly with probably Bernardo Silva on the right. And as we saw last night, Bernardo basically played as a false nine. So I only foresee at the moment more minutes for Mahrez. One of the interesting things for myself, I got him in game week 30, was looking at his minutes over the Christmas period, where when you've obviously got the bunch of games together and you expect mass rotation with City, he started three games and played 90 minutes, and he played 45 minutes in the fourth. And it did lean me to think that in games where you've got them together in close proximity, that Pep trusts him a little bit more. I saw a quote from him previously where he said, basically, Mahrez doesn't have the muscle build-up of other players, and therefore he's less susceptible to injury because he doesn't use the power in his legs as much. And it might be that I'm going to lean towards Riyad Mahrez as my first with Laporte and De Bruyne. What was your thoughts as we were going without De Bruyne?
I just couldn't. I don't know. I've stuck with Liverpool, and I had Mane from the beginning of the season, and he's just done really well for me. So I've stuck with him, and there's no reason to change him. Kind of thing for me. Not that he's better or worse or anything like that. It's just Mane has done the business, and it was difficult for me to kind of fit them both in, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, he can do such damage, though, De Bruyne. He's a wonderful player to watch as well. I think you, as an FPL manager, he's the sort of player you enjoy having in your FPL team. And it's the trust of knowing he can return in any game as well. I would actually say he's one of the better captain choices this week, even though they're playing Liverpool, because he's capable in any game.
you know, this next question links up with that because it's very focused on Liverpool. The only, because I'm thinking of getting all the Man City boys in, but obviously it depends what happens in the FA Cup, because I think that's something they'll prioritize now, and then they have the Champions League coming up in August as well. So I could see the rotation factors. I think Liverpool are just going to keep their foot down, and that this is all they have to play for, right? So they're going to just chase records.
I agree.
Chase records and smash whatever they need to smash ahead of them. So I that's the only thing I'm trying to keep the Man City Liverpool thing balanced, and I'm still leaning towards, because I've got Van Dijk, Mane, those guys in there. So I'm still quite Liverpool heavy at the moment, but we'll see what happens there. Next question we have from RPick86. What are the feelings on Liverpool's approach to the rest of the season once the title is won? Heavy rotation, or do we think they will push to break records and we will see Mane, Virgil van Dijk, Trent, Salah play most of the games?
I think they'll play most. A little bit like yourself, I wouldn't have huge fears on it if I owned Liverpool players. I mean, they've got a period coming up where you've got 3 days between 32 and 35. And are Mane and Salah, for example, likely to start all 4 of them games? Possibly not, but I think they certainly both play at least 3. And then again, I think week-to-week decision, you can make that decision in terms of whether you want to captain them or not. I don't see mass rotation. I mean, for example, I would imagine that there's no reason for Van Dijk not to play every game left. They've got no FA Cup commitments, no Europe to worry about the rest of the season. They can go out and completely enjoy themselves now the title's been won. So it wouldn't surprise me, even though they've got those 4 games between July the 2nd and July the 11th, it wouldn't surprise me if Mane, Salah, Trent, they started all of them. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you. Unless there is some injury that happens or something unexpected happens, I see them being involved quite heavily. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, the substitutions, I think they'll be, you know, if maybe they're not going to play from the beginning, they'll definitely be looking at the 30-minute, you know, 60-minute mark to make sure they get on for the last 30 or something like that, especially
great.
The results and the balance. So I'm with you on Liverpool. We have a question from Suyan Shah. I'd love to see Asmir and Planet FPL go head-to-head with a team of 11 from game week 32 onwards. 100 million budget, usual FPL rules apply. That would be pretty cool if we went head-to-head. What do you think?
I'm up for it.
Yeah. How do we do that? How do we do this?
Should we pick something afterwards and post it?
Okay. So
on Twitter.
Okay. Well, why don't we do it from? So this is game week 32 coming up, or is it 31 this week?
32 this week.
Okay. So shall we start from 33? We'll get our teams up. Or what do you think? Should we do it this weekend?
Let's do it this weekend.
Okay. All right. So tonight our teams will go up. So because this pod's going to get posted today, so we're talking on Friday. So yeah, let's do it. Okay. Let's post our teams to see what happens.
Let's do it. I'm up for that.
Are we going to put a little wager on it or no?
I reckon you might have a bit more money than me.
No, okay.
I'm up for a wager.
I was going to say, if I lose, I give you a signed shirt or something, signed pair of gloves. What can we do?
If you lose, you've got to come on my podcast.
Okay, I'll come on your podcast. Okay. What about if you lose? You've already been on my podcast.
I'll come on again.
Next season, absolutely. Deal.
Done.
Perfect. Next question we have from @FPL_Potter. As an FPL player, did you bench your premium players when playing against them? Which former players took FPL seriously? City loves you more than you will know. Well, thank you very much for the kind words. So I guess that's more of a question to me, which actually I always did. Whenever I played against anyone, I benched them or I would transfer them out, which hurt massively. And I've usually taken quite a lot of pride in my FPL teams, just because I love it. And even the American sports, I do fantasy. And that hurt me. And I was always then middle of the pack. I would never compete. Whereas if you look at my teams this year, you know, they're all in the running to be up there, which has changed because I've been playing abroad. I haven't been able to, you know, I haven't had to change these guys. So for me, it's definitely something that I did just for no particular reason that I thought, you know what, I can't, I don't know. If I'm playing against these guys and it looks like they score, I don't know. I just think from every reason, I always took them out and definitely killed my ranking. And that's something.
Did you not keep these guys out? No.
I know. It's just like that. That's the thing. It just felt a bit weird, right? So I don't know why, and that's why I took him always out. And you know, like you said, I was going to try to keep him out anyway. So yeah, they might have not had a great week, but ultimately, I always took him out just to kind of keep things clean. But a few of the guys took it seriously. We had some really good fantasy leagues within our team, and we had a lot of banter with it. And I think it's a lot of fun. Actually, it's a great way to interact with teammates and his teams, and it keeps that kind of camaraderie going. So I definitely recommend it for most teams to get involved with FPL. But I definitely used to bench those guys, and thankfully I didn't have
how prominent is it amongst the players in the professional game, do you think?
Yeah,
in England.
It's pretty full on. The teams I've been in, talking about Stoke and talking about Bournemouth. When I was at Chelsea, it wasn't really done. But definitely at Bournemouth and Stoke, we had some pretty good FPL teams. And it was cool because you get the players involved, all the staff in the club get involved. And that's not really, nothing really happens around the, you know, the football year where everyone kind of does one thing to collectively. So I think it's a great way to, like I said, interact and integrate everyone into this sort of process and something fun to do. So worked out really well. Worked out really well.
Can I ask another question? Okay. Did you pick yourself?
No, never did. No, I never did. I never picked myself. I never picked guys I was playing against.
I have a few times.
Well, thank you. No, I never did. I actually did once in the draft league because I was like, listen, if I'm the best value available. I couldn't let it go. but I never picked myself. I don't know why. But I was like a full manager. I signed myself, but not. Not an FPL. That is strange.
Interesting.
Next question we have from Gary_Shep. What alternate ships would you like to see introduced, and what would you get rid of?
What was that again? Sorry, Asma.
What alternate ship would you like to see introduced, and what would you get rid of?
I don't mind how the chips play out at the moment. I'm someone who prides myself on strategy and planning ahead. Most of our successful pods, I'd say, that people enjoy the most is when we do chip strategy stuff. So I'm quite happy with how they are. I hated the all-out attack chips. I was glad that went. It's probably more what most people's frustration is in our FPL community on Twitter is how the bonus points work out. And I'd actually probably rather get rid of them than change any of the chips. It just leads – the bonus points leads to so much frustration. Look at Salah the other night, goal and assist and no bonus, and you're left asking questions of why. And it always seems like it's people like him. Dribblers are penalized, for example, in terms of missing out on the bonus. So I'd prefer to lose the bonus points completely, actually, but that's never a step that they'll take, because it means people are going to be scoring less points, and in theory an overall less enjoyment, therefore people want to see higher scorings. So I don't have an issue with the way the chips are at the moment. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't have any huge issues either. Bonus points confuse the life out of me, to be honest. So I take them as they come. The only thing I thought, you know, could be a little bit more interesting is to kind of put a little bit more value on the vice captain. Really, the vice captain doesn't do anything. I mean, what you have it there just in case, but I mean, how often has your vice captain been actually called into action? So I thought maybe if there's a way of getting a little bit more value into them, I don't know what you think.
I think it offers a good safety net, the vice captain. I personally wouldn't change it. I mean, everyone who captained, I think it was Raheem Sterling against Watford game week 6. Everyone who had Kevin De Bruyne as vice captain certainly knew what the value of the chip was worth that day. So personally, no, I wouldn't go changing it. Yeah, I think that there's a case for having a vice captain as 1.5 points maybe. But I think for them to structure that, probably quite difficult if you end up with odd returns and that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how they were structured, but I just thought that was one thing I thought of. But as you say, they've actually got it pretty spot on with the chips and everything else. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Next question we have from @PierlosPen. We've kind of touched on this a little bit already, but best city assets for the run-in that aren't called Kevin.
I think it might be Mahrez.
Yeah. What about Foden? Tell me, what do you think? He's getting a little bit more.
He's such a talented footballer. I really think he's going to be the business. He's another one who's going to have a a big jump up in price before next season with David Silva leaving, I think. But I just think he's going to be in and out the team a lot. You can't argue it is valued. There's almost nothing to lose. But it almost feels like with them fixtures they've got left, you might be losing out on a City spot. I think one defensively for the running is a good idea. I completely understand why you've gone with Ederson, knowing that he'll play every week. I mean, even to the point that Claudio Bravo will presumably play in the FA Cup. You've got no concerns there. Laporte's the only real alternative, but he's going to be in and out the team. So, therefore, the optimal three for me might be Kevin, Riyad Mahrez and Ederson. Obviously, we all need to keep a close eye on what the situation is with Jesus, but I've got fear over his minutes. I'm not sure if I've ever got the cojones to be captaining him when you don't know if he is or he isn't going to play, even in spite of Aguero's injury.
Yeah, I mean, Pep's teams are just the most difficult to call. Anything can happen each and every week. So, yeah, I mean, good choices on your end. Next question we have from Autori Close, FPL. Best goalkeeper pick for the remaining fixtures?
Go with Pope again.
Yeah, we mentioned that earlier, didn't we? Nick Pope looks. I mean, I wasn't quite aware of the run-in that you said there, but, you know, you couldn't rule out a clean sheet in any of those games almost, right?
Well, Liverpool 35 is potentially a bit of an issue. Obviously, Wolves 36 is a difficult fixture. But as I said, with the other games they've got, I mean, the five of the poorest attacking sides in the league, Palace, Sheffield United, West Ham, Norwich, Brighton. So from a clean sheet prospect, I think there's every chance with him. And he does tend to have a higher ceiling than other goalkeepers. He does tend to be in the bonus more than others. I mean, he picked up an additional save point against Watford because he dropped the thing. I don't think he's the best keeper in the world. But I think for FPL, he'll do absolutely fine between now and the end of the season. I imagine the top point scorer between now and the end will probably be Alisson or Ederson.
Yeah.
Because I just can't see them two conceding many goals. But particularly with Liverpool, I'm not sure you want to waste the spot on Alisson. I would rather pay the extra even for Robertson or Van Dijk. Obviously, Trent.
Yeah,
but with City, it's a little different with Ederson because of the security of the playing minutes.
Good shout. This brings us on to the last question, and actually, it's a pretty cool question. This is from Angus 81. What price would you assign these guys in FPL for next season? And who would possibly be even too high to pick looking ahead? We'll go with Trent. Number one, you touched on this earlier. You think he's going to be quite pricey next year, isn't he?
I think he'll be pricier. I think he'll probably be 8 million, but that's still way too cheap in my opinion. If you compare the returns with even the guys who are sort of 11, 12 million, he's matching them. So, I mean, I wouldn't think twice about buying him at 9 million next year, but I would be amazed if at FPL they priced a defender that high. So I imagine he'll be 8 million, but I'd comfortably pay a lot more for him.
Yeah, I was going to say, what would be the ceiling for him? What wouldn't you pay for him? 10 million, 10 million plus? Or, I mean, I know these are crazy figures.
At 10 million, it becomes a big choice because we've seen it before with title winners, and I don't imagine this will happen with Liverpool, that obviously the next season can be quite difficult. I would imagine they would have massive motivation, hopefully if crowds are back, to go again and prove that they're the best. But obviously, if they then have a big dip in the amount of games they're winning and they're conceding more goals, then suddenly it doesn't necessarily become worth it at 10 million. At 10 million, I think there's a decision to make. Anything lower, I think, will buy him.
Yeah. Oh, good shout. What about Phil Foden?
I think you're probably looking at him being priced around sort of what Bernardo Silva, David Silva are now. You might get away with 6.5 or 7. I suspect he'll be 7 or 7.5, I would have thought, because, I mean, Guardiola's already said it, hasn't he? They're not going to replace David Silva. They don't need to. They've already got the ready-made replacement now.
Right. Yeah, that could be 7-odd million. It's not a bad shot for him if he's going to be playing absolutely regularly.
He'll be, I'm pretty sure he'll be very popular next season in FPL.
Yeah. I'm looking at one of the ultimate players for FPL, KDB. He's going to be expensive, huh?
Yeah. I suspect you'll probably come in at about 11.5, but I mean, I'd pay 12 personally. Again, it's just the reliability of him so great. And you could almost leave the captaincy on him because he can return in any game. Although looking at his returns this year, actually, he hasn't hit double figures against any of the current top six or seven, I don't think, other than, I mean, Sheffield United are seventh now, I think. Other than them, I think he might have had one when they played him over the Christmas period. Other than that, his returns have been against weaker sides. So you can captain him regularly if fixtures right as well. I think he'll be 11 and a half. 12 is still a buy, in my opinion.
This next player is one I'm sure people have their eye on and with a lot of intrigue. Timo Werner.
Yeah. He's an exceptional talent, isn't he? It'd be really interesting to see where he fits into that Chelsea team next year.
Always find it difficult. I don't know what you think. Always find it difficult with new players because that's where he's going to play him at centre forward. Is he going to play him in the wing? How is this going to look, right?
Well, I think I watched him at White Hart Lane in the Champions League. I think his best position is probably where he played that night, which is as the left forward. But then if Pulisic is fit, that feels like the best position for him probably as well. You can imagine him playing with Ziyech on the right next year, I think, with Pulisic on the left. And actually, Werner through the middle is where I probably foresee him in Chelsea's best lineup. Abraham's not getting favouritism over Giroud at the moment. So my feeling is that's where Lampard has the intention of playing him, is through the middle. At that position, I think 10 million would be very attractive. That's roughly where I expect him to be priced. But then that said, if you reflect on all the Chelsea players this year, when the prices came out and we saw there was no one at higher than 7.5, I think we all thought, right, they've got tough fixtures at the start, but by Christmas, we'll all know which one to get. And actually, we're still sitting here now and we're not really sure which assets to go to because they're not strong enough defensively. There isn't enough reliability in a Pulisic or an Abraham or a Willian, for example. So you can't see any of them going up in price. Therefore, that's a big jump up from 7, 7.5. Up to Werner if he's 10 million, for example. Mm. So it might be that he comes in cheaper. I don't envisage him being higher than 10.
Yeah, that could be a good value pick at that sort of price, actually. Last but not least, obviously, again, someone who's come in January and done really, really well is Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, great. I mean, I think that's probably 10. He's right, probably where he'll be at. He's been so popular within the FPL community since he came and joined, as I said earlier on the show. He's really uplifted everything about United, I think, since he came in. To the point you look at him now and you think, wow, you're a really good side to watch again. You're beginning to get that feeling you used to have with United, which I don't think even United fans won't have had since Ferguson has gone, really. I think 10 million on the penalties as well, that's confirmed now. Very capable. He doesn't hesitate when he sees the net. He's not bothered. It was noticeable the other night with Sheffield United, who I know they had players missing, but are generally one of the better defensive sides, that they were shutting him down at every opportunity to make sure he didn't shoot. I think in other games, and Brighton might be one of them on Tuesday, that he finds space a little bit easier to find. He doesn't think twice about shooting. He's a really slightly strange technique where he strikes through the ball, and you'll be able to answer it better than me, but it makes it so difficult for goalkeepers with the way the ball seems to move and deviate. He gets a really top-heavy dip on him, so the ball dips back down. Did you find, just while we're on it, Asmir, did you find goalkeeping more difficult in later years as the ball's developed?
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, our technique has changed a lot as well. I mean, it's almost now too. I mean, it's always been that, but it's even more now. It's just to keep the ball out by any means because with the new techniques and some of the techniques that players have developed, as you say, that sort of straight-on shot, which is the Ronaldo, I guess the original Ronaldo kind of technique, and the ball just moves everywhere. And it's just about trying to get your body, arm, anything behind these balls sometimes because it moves so much and so late, which the problem is not so much if you see it earlier, but the late movement is what does you. And it's one sometimes you can't even react to, and that's what's difficult. But yeah, I mean, No one's developing technique to help the goalkeepers.
I don't think they will.
I don't think that's going to start anytime soon. So, it's going to become more tricky. But Bruno Fernandes, what a player. Good thing also, but I think United's running this year, and I think it's going to help his value more if he does well. United are playing for something, and they need to keep these guys out there. So, he'll be definitely at a high value this summer. So, yeah, no, I agree with your values and appreciate your thoughts on these. But this has been fun. Really, I can't thank you enough for your time, James. I mean, looking forward to the rest of the games. It's pretty cool when they come in thick and fast. I think for FPL players, it doesn't get any better than this, does it?
Nah, I mean, it's not the football that we all wanted, but I think it's the football that we all needed at the moment. I'm a football fan first, above and beyond an FPL player. So it's great to have the game back.
Yeah.
We've all missed it so much.
Exactly. You put it the right way. Not what we wanted, but it's what we needed. So couldn't agree with you more. Well, listen, James, enjoy the rest of the season. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Season of Sports. Guys, make sure you check out James on his Planet FPL podcast and his social media pages. Really great insights on things Fantasy Premier League and all the tips that you need. So, James, thanks a lot for joining me here again, and take care. Stay safe.
Pleasure. Thanks very much, Azmir. Good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you. Take care. Hope you guys enjoyed James being on the show. He's the host of the Planet FPL podcast. I think it's great insights. I'm an FPL nut, so I love to get into one of the fantasy leagues. So insight from him is priceless for me. So really, really enjoyed that. Thank you for all the questions. You know, I'm going to answer some more questions in the huddle now. This week has been amazing with all your questions. I know last week we didn't get to it. So really appreciate you guys getting your questions in on all our social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Couple of news notes around the world of sports. We're going to have a baseball season, it looks like, 60-game season. The commissioner took, you know, was given the power to take things into his own hands. So can't wait to have baseball back at the end of July, which is going to be awesome. And I think actually 60-game season could be cool because it's going to give us a bit of more impetus in the games, a little bit more importance that baseball needs sometimes, a little bit more relevance to the games. So it's been great news, and hopefully they'll be back very, very soon. Can't wait to watch that. And there you go. So we're going to start now with the huddle. Answer some more of your questions that you've sent in. So really, really appreciate them. The first one comes in at Clean Sheet Wipeout FPL. Do you see the relegation battle being as fiercely fought as it has been in previous years? Watching these at the bottom today, there seemed to be a lack of fight from some. Well, I think it's one of the more fascinating relegation battles in years. You know, you got four teams within, well, basically on the same points. So it could be any. I think Norwich is going to be very difficult now, and I think it'll be any of those two of four going down: Watford, West Ham, Aston Villa, or Bournemouth. So plenty to play for. Couldn't call it right now. I think it's incredibly even. Obviously, hopefully Bournemouth stay up. That's I've got some loyalty to them, so that'll be great, but couldn't call it anywhere else. But I think lack of fight sometimes is difficult to say, because when you're in that battle, a little bit of confidence, not wanting to lose, it looks like maybe you're holding back a little bit, but really it's a tough situation to be in. We've got a question from at Parker_Bradley. Who has been the standout player since the restart for you? Bias included, obviously. Traore has to be up there. Yeah, Adama Traore is definitely one of them. Jimenez as well for Wolves has been fantastic. Bruno Fernandes for United, I think, has done really, really well and looked really, really well. You know, he's fitted in incredibly into the whole Manchester United team since January. So those are the main guys. I would say Martial with his first hat-trick. He's looked really, really good. Good to see Harry Kane back. You know, he's backfiring. So that's awesome. I can't wait to see how the rest of it plays out. At Benjamin J. Millar, do you think the Premier League or FA will create similar restrictions for Premier League players playing FPL that they do for gambling? I don't think so. I mean, FPL is more of a fun thing. It's fantasy. That's the key word. It's fantasy, whereas gambling is direct money on the outcome of result of a game. So I think these are two very separate things. So the FPL is a lot of fun. I mentioned earlier in the show that it's something that's great for interactions, for teams, camaraderie, and gets people more involved with each other from the whole club. So I don't see any restrictions being put on there as they're really two separate things. So that's my thoughts. Appreciate the questions, guys. Really, really appreciate them. You sending all your questions through Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. That's where we are. Keep listening to our podcast. We're on Audioboom. We're on iTunes. We're on Spotify, Anchor, wherever you get podcasts from. Keep listening. Leave us a review. Love to get your thoughts on everything that we do. And I'll be back with you guys very, very soon.